This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. Today's conversation is about a New England Journal of Medicine paper comparing the anticoagulation outcomes of warfarin versus aspirin in patients with heart failure and stable sinus rhythm. Our guest is Dr. Shinichi Homma, one of the two major contributors to an international study that followed 2,300 patients for an average of 3.5 years. The patients had been randomized to either warfarin at an international normalized ratio of 2.75, or aspirin at 325 milligrams daily. They were looking for the first occurrence of a composite of either ischemic stroke, intracerebral hemorrhage, or death from any cause. It turned out that the rates of that composite outcome did not differ significantly between the groups. However, warfarin was more protective against ischemic stroke, but aspirin was associated with less major hemorrhage than was warfarin. Our guest is a professor of medicine in the Division of Cardiology at Columbia University Medical Center in New York. Welcome, Dr. Homma.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Did I misstate any of...
Yes, actually, the target INR was 2.75, but the actual achieved was 2.5.
Okay.
And the number of patients was 2,305, not exactly 2,305.
I should have said roughly 2,300.
Exactly.
Over
300, it'll be just fine.
Over 2,300. Okay.
Yeah.
My first question is the choice of aspirin or warfarin to avoid the coagulation-related complications of heart failure seems to have been based on clinicians' preference in the past. Is it possible now to have an evidence-based preference?
Yes. The use of warfarin compared to aspirin has been practiced for over 30 years. However, there has been no definitive trial to address this. The most recent trial that attempted to address this was called Watch Trial, which was published several years ago, but enrolled much smaller number of patients than we did and was not double-blindly randomized. As such, ours represents the largest ever study to address this issue.
I see. So the largest ever, those 2,305.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You included only patients in sinus rhythm in your study. Can you talk a little bit about why the others were excluded?
Yes. Well, there are approximately 5.7 million heart failure patients in the United States. This represents a very large population. However, some of these patients are in atrial fibrillation. And treatment for patients in atrial fibrillation in general has been to use anticoagulants. As such, the use of anticoagulants for atrial fibrillation is well established. Therefore, those patients were certainly not included. And our question focused on patients with sinus rhythm and heart failure without atrial fibrillation or other conditions that have definitive indication for use of anticoagulation, such as those with artificial valves or those who have known thrombus in the heart.
One of the composite outcomes was not, let me see if I can go back to it, it was intracerebral hemorrhage, which is not a coagulation outcome. It's not a hypercoagulation outcome. Were you measuring that so that you could see whether over-treatment with warfarin or aspirin had a deleterious effect?
Yes, precisely. It's one of the feared effects of anticoagulation from warfarin is bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
Bleeding in the head or in the brain itself will be classified as intracerebral hemorrhage, and this is one of the feared outcome of use of warfarin. Therefore, we wanted to make sure that such a rate is not increased using warfarin compared to aspirin.
Okay. You found that warfarin was more protective against ischemic stroke and aspirin more effective against major bleeds. Wouldn't that, I'm a non-clinician, but would that not favor using warfarin since stroke is too often irreversible, whereas bleeding is more addressable of the two complications?
I think that's an excellent question. And it depends on one's point of view. We defined major hemorrhage has very severe hemorrhage, which required use of at least 2 units of packed red blood cell transfusion. And this occurred about twice as much in patients receiving warfarin compared to aspirin. At the same time, stroke rate, as you pointed out, was much lower with warfarin compared to aspirin. Now, can major hemorrhage be treated with stroke? It depends. Mm-hmm. For example, one may have a very small stroke whereby there is no residual effect of stroke, but one could have a very significant hemorrhage which requires operation or other procedures. Mm-hmm. To decide which one's worse is difficult. Therefore, oftentimes when we look at the effectiveness of warfarin, we look at the beneficial effect as well as the bad effect, which in warfarin's case is mostly excess bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And again, comparing stroke to major hemorrhage, this would be a case-by-case comparison.
So in other words, and that's the reason, I guess, at the end of the abstract, as I'm recalling, that you say that that decision probably should be individualized.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So there may be patients in whom the risk of bleeding may be very low. At the same time, the benefit from not having stroke is very large, in which case warfarin may possibly be a preferred medication. At this point, to address this issue, amongst a large group of patients that we have enrolled in the study, we are analyzing to see if there is clearly, easily identifiable set of subgroup patients in whom warfarin may be much more beneficial than aspirin, even when considering the side effect of bleeding.
And so you're analyzing the data to see if you can identify that group?
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned that the newer antithrombotic agents, dabigatran, rivaroxaban, may in fact be better than the choices that you examined, but they weren't available when you started your study, of course, and since then they've shown a few problems of their own. Do you think that warfarin and aspirin are going to be around for a long time for use in these patients, or do you think that perhaps the newer antithrombotics are going to achieve dominance?
I think that's an excellent question. In the atrial fibrillation area, new antithrombotics are beginning to replace, as you know, the use of warfarin, and this is beginning to happen in other areas where warfarin is used. So in the future, there will be trials to test new antithrombotics against where warfarin has been shown to be effective and standard of care. In our population overall, since there was no effect or additive or beneficial effect of warfarin, I don't think it makes sense to try to test warfarin against new antithrombotic agents in all of the patients enrolled in our study, but for a subset of patients in whom we can identify that have shown warfarin benefit, in those patients, since the new antithrombotic agents are easier to take and has potentially even less bleeding side effects than warfarin, warfarin could be tested against new antithrombotics in such a group of patients, again, in those that might show benefit from warfarin.
What might clinicians do differently tomorrow at work than they were doing before they read your paper?
Well, I think the clinical impact is that out of about 5.7 million heart failure patients in the United States, about 70% are in regular sinus rhythm, which means our paper becomes applicable to up to 4 million people in the United States. And currently, if we assume about 20% of these 4 million people in regular sinus rhythm are getting warfarin, that's about 800,000 patients. These patients, from the result of the study, will no longer be necessitated to take warfarin and could go on aspirin, unless there is a specific indication for warfarin in some of these patients.
Well, that's a practical result and something that a lot of people can start doing tomorrow. All right, Dr. Homa, I want to thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Well, thank you, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
That was our 154th edition. All earlier ones may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, whose website is jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Isidore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Shurer and I thank you for listening.